day.
Good day. Welcome to another episode of Foreside Chat, a podcast about blacksmithing, bladesmithing, and everything in between, with a heavy focus on talent in the Great White North.
We're talking about Canada, eh? And you might recognize that voice. That's my Matt LaRocca is hopping in on this episode. Our good friend Nick from Old Soldier Toolworks taking the night off, and we've thrown the microphone towards Matt to see how he's doing and bring him in as a co-host because, well, we'll be honest here. In the background, he's a huge part of our lives. Matt and I talk a lot, and I know he's been talking to Nick a bunch too. So, man, thank you for jumping on the show with us, LaRocca's. It's awesome to have you here. Yeah, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. How about you?
Doing good. Before we dive too far into that, let's introduce our guest of the evening or of the day of weekend. Depends when you're listening to the show. We've got Lisa. Is it Huth? I didn't ask you before. Is it? How do I pronounce
it's
it? It is Huth. Ah, son of a gun. She's coming at us from Castlegar. Lisa is an artist, blacksmith, metal worker that is putting out some amazing work. She's got work going out in a very cool exhibit happening in Castlegar that I happened to have the chances of seeing firsthand a couple of years ago when I was visiting British Columbia with my family. And through that, I got to find out of Lisa, and we've kind of been chatting a little bit back and forth, getting to know each other since then. And I threw it out to her that, hey, why don't you come on the show? I think it's about time. I've known you for a while here. Let's get to really know you, interview you, and find out about your life. So thank you very much for sitting down with us, Lisa. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. How you doing, bud?
I'm good. Thanks so much for the intro and for having me here. I'm honored. You've had lots of amazing guests on here, and I'm honored to be a small part of it.
Well, like Matt was saying at the beginning of the show, we like to focus our talents or on the talents in the Great White North. Coming out of Castlegar, you get a very different taste of Canada than a lot of other people. You're in Fruit Valley and the beautiful mountains, and you travel east of that, and just all of a sudden you travel into the prairies, and it's cold all the time, minus 40. What's the weather like there right now? Because it's bloody cold here today.
Really? Oh, blue sky, sunshine, and I think it was plus 17 or 18 today.
I hate you.
Nice.
What's it like where you are there, LaRocca's?
It's cold. It's like minus 2 outside. Heat on.
It's cold. It's minus 2. Take off, eh? Jeez. What is it here right now? Minus. It's only minus 10. That's not too bad. It could be worse. I thought it was. I thought we were supposed to hit minus 20 tonight. I think.
Holy you guys can keep shit. It.
Right? Yeah. I know. Well, it was, and the other day it was like plus 7, which was really warm for us. So, yeah. I really wish I was in the mountains where you are. That's for sure. How long you been there for now, Lisa?
We've been here a little over 8 years. Okay. I'm originally from Kelowna.
So, no way.
Cool. Yeah, 4 hours away, I guess.
Yeah, born and raised there.
I was. Yeah. One
no
of you.
So you got to see Kelowna go through its boom phase then, because I got to visit Kelowna when I was a kid, and it was a tiny town when I was a kid, man.
Yeah. Actually, both my parents were born and raised there as well. And it used to be much, much slower paced, quieter town. Always been beautiful, but got a little busy for us.
Yeah, just a little bit busy. I have a very good friend that lives in Kelowna that I go and visit on the regular. And I love Kelowna, but I think I loved it more when it was a smaller town. I don't know. It could be. I haven't spent enough time to really say that. Are you a skier or a snowboarder or any of that kind of stuff?
I used to snowboard. We don't anymore. We just focus on snowmobiling. Yeah. The whole family's got sled, so we head up to the mountains every weekend, and have an awesome time.
Oh, that's awesome. That's super awesome. What was it that took you to Castlegar specifically?
Well, as a kid, my parents, we would always take our holidays, like summer holidays in the Kootenays. And so it was always like a lifetime dream to move out here, but finding work out here is tough. Mm-hmm. My husband, he got a job at Fortis, and then, once he got that job, he's like, you know, I can post to the Kootenays, right? I was like, do it. he posted, and I think, he posted, and then he took the position, and we sold everything and moved out here.
I don't blame you for going to Castlegar, right? Because it actually kind of reminds me of what Kelowna was like, you know, back in the day, right?
Yeah.
The only other place that I found myself really digging outside of Kelowna was kind of that Kootenay area. Like, I love Nelson. Nelson's a freaking wicked awesome town, and
it's beautiful.
Roslyn's a nice place too. Yeah. That's really cool there. Osoyoos is a really cool town too, but way too hot.
Oh, it's crazy hot. Crazy. Yeah.
Can't imagine being a black there.
Oh, yeah. We're in between Castlegar and Nelson. So, like, I'm 40 minutes to Nelson and 15 minutes to Castlegar.
Oh, no way. Cool. So, do you have a big property then?
We have 2 acres.
Oh, that's awesome, dude. Do you do anything special with the property, or you just have 2 acres because you have 2 acres?
We've been clearing, like, all the dead trees and cleaning it up a lot. I have chickens, and so we built a big chicken coop and run, and then we've got a big garden, so we try to utilize the property. And then we're building this new workshop, and it's on the property too.
Nice.
Is the workshop,
pardon,
how big is the workshop?
36 by 36.
Nice. That's good.
But it's not all mine. I gotta share, like, split it down the middle with my husband. So,
what does he do?
Well, he just wants it for, like, tinkering on the sleds and quads and all the other.
He can have a small corner. Jeez Louise.
He's pretty concerned about, like, my area encroaching onto his.
Well, what are you doing for a shop right now?
I work out of our garage. So it's like at 20 by 20. And again, I don't have all of it.
Is it attached?
So it's attached to a rental suite. So I don't have my camera or anything in here. It's I have my quiet equipment in here.
Where do you have your hammer?
It's in the new shop, but it was sitting in my C-can up until last year, for the last seven years,
Oh, no way. So you've had that hammer for a while then?
I bought the Little Giant. I bought that in 2006, I think. Actually, you know who I bought it from?
Who from?
Yeah, you should guess.
Paul.
No, that's a good guess.
Patrick.
Alberta. No.
Oh,
Alberta.
Sean.
No.
Nick.
No. You had him on here.
From Alberta. Was it? Yeah. It wasn't Wes.
No.
Melton in Alberta.
No. Who else is in Alberta? Oh, Timothy?
Nope.
Who else? Ethan.
No. You gotta think this is 2006. So somebody that's been in the game.
Oh, duh. From Mystic Forge.
There you go, Mark. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know Mark fairly well then, if going back that far.
So how that worked was, I used to do a little bit of collaborating with Ted Howell from Red Willow Forge. He was in Summerland. And he was awesome, and he was always getting me to get more equipment. And then I was arranging to get a 50-pound little giant out of the state. And then that one, it fell through. And Ted was like, that's good. I got another one for you. So he's like, I want you to call Mark, because Mark and him were good friends. And so then, I called Mark. And then, I don't think that, so my husband's name is Clay. I don't think we were married then, but we drove out to Alberta. It was cold. And, he loaded it on the, I borrowed a trailer from a buddy of mine. And Mark loaded it on the trailer. And it's a 1907 100-pound little giant.
That's awesome.
Yeah. At the time, I phoned Sid from Little Giant, and he said that it was the oldest one intact that he had on record. But that's not the case anymore. Like, there's older ones that have popped up. But then last year I went and did something silly and bought a Stamac. So it's
silly. This wasn't silly. That's a brilliant purchase.
So,
How much use have you had out of that thing yet? No.
Nothing, because it's sitting in my new shop. And there's no electricity in there yet.
Oh, no way. Okay, yeah. I get you. Wow, dang. Wow.
Yeah.
So how much longer until you get to it?
We're just putting the poly up. The exterior's all done, and we're just putting the poly up inside now. So we're getting a lot closer, it's been a lot of work and a long process. Just funding it as we go. That'll be sweet.
It's interesting that you say that, funding it as you go, because that's actually kind of was going to be my next question, is how does somebody do that when they run a business that depends on them having their shop space? You know, do you take a month off of your business and focus solely on building the new shop so you can just, you know, buy once, cry once kind of deal, get it done? Or do you have to space it out so that you can ensure that you still got some income coming in, that you still, you know, you keep your customers happy, and, you know, you got to deal with some return customers here and there maybe? I'm not too sure. How does that work for you?
It's been a weekend project. It's like, I think we're on year three now.
And wow.
So since I have this space that I'm in now, I just keep working out here. It's not as efficient as like my old shop used to be in Kelowna. Soon I'll be over there, hopefully.
What was the old shop in Kelowna like?
When I first started, so I started my business in 2003, my parents gave me a wing off of their barn. And, so that was awesome. And I stayed in there until the neighbor was complaining. They had 10 acres. Once I bought the trip hammer, the neighbor got a little cranky. And then Clay and I sold our house we had a house in Black Mountain. We sold that, and then we moved out to Joe Rich, which is where I grew up. And we bought a 3-acre parcel there, and it had a shop on it. It wasn't big enough, so we added on and raised the roof and all that stuff. And what was that? It was 1,200 square feet. And I have a little over half.
That's and you why did you move away from that? Like, that was
That was awesome.
Yeah.
But we, well, yeah, like I said, we had a desire to go to a smaller town, and we had children, and we wanted to raise them in a smaller community, and it was a big decision, but.
That was a rather redundant question. I'm sorry. Matt, we're okay, dude. I'm totally robbing the show on you here, dude. I'm sorry, man. What are you drinking there, dude?
I am drinking Magners Irish Cider.
Ooh, yum, yum.
It's some remnants of St. Patrick's Day.
Ah. I've taken a note from our good man, Brian Hose, and Derek Melton from that episode that I did with them. And I mean, I've talked about this quite a bit in the last couple of years, that alcohol has played a role in my life that maybe hasn't been the best role. And I don't necessarily struggle with it. Like, I'm not a daily drinker. I drink on the weekends. But I did notice myself starting, like, I was having a beer almost every time we would record an episode, maybe 2-3 beers every episode, which would be during the middle of the week. And then I started noticing myself having the occasional beer on nights that I wasn't recording as well. And then having the beers on the weekend as well. And I was like, okay, maybe I'm starting to drink a little bit here. And I've also noticed the effect as well of having a bunch of beers one night and waking up the next day and not necessarily being hungover, but definitely not being on my A game. And it's like, why am I doing this to myself? I need to be on my A game right now, dude. Like, this is like a time in my life where I really need to be focusing on execution. Get this, like, time is of the essence right now, and alcohol is not helping that at all, amongst a few other things in my life that I've been working on, kiboshing and focusing on execution. Let's get this done.
It's funny you say that, because like my foraging time is usually on Fridays in the shop, and during the week I'll come in the shop late at night and do some finishing work or some wood turning or something like that. But I find myself, like, the shop is like my man cave, essentially. So when I come in the shop, I usually bring a drink.
Yep.
Or, you know, I have the bottle of whiskey sitting in a corner and have a drink later on. Or it's definitely something that you got to watch, because it's easy, especially if you spend a lot of time and you start associating the shop with having that drink.
Bingo.
Right?
That was my issue. Start,
yeah. So it's something that I've been keeping an eye out on as well. So now I have a little rule that I'm implementing on Fridays, because it's my production day, is that I won't have a drink until I'm done. Yes. And I don't drink a lot. Like, I'll have one drink, two drinks a night, and that's it when I'm out here. But it's just that, well, if it's 3-4 nights a week, then it adds up, right?
Yep. Yeah, like,
absolutely.
I would have like 6 beers on a Friday night and be up till like 3 or 4 in the morning, sometimes later, depending. And the next day, like, I mean, I could sleep in till like 10 or 11 if I want to, if I stay up that late in the night, to try to make up for the sleep instead of going to bed at a normal hour, waking up at a normal hour. Either way, it's the beers. I could go to bed at a normal hour and wake up at a normal hour. The beers are the issue of why you wake up the next day feeling like, hey, like, where's my focus at here? Things aren't quite, but it's me, dude. I totally know, because I watch my brother-in-law. He drinks every day. Like, he's a daily drinker, not heavy. Like, he'll have a few beers every day, pretty much, type thing. And it's like, I don't get it, man. I don't know how you can do that and still function as well. He is on top of his A game. He runs an amazing business. He's a great dad, a great husband. I look up to the guy outside of his drinking, because I'm just like, I don't get it. I don't know how you do it, man. But
everyone's different.
Yeah. Do you find alcohol plays a role in your work at all, Lisa?
I typically, on Friday, when I'm cleaning up the shop, that's when I get to have my first drink. I did bring a couple out here because we are a podcast.
Feel free to go ahead, but I'm not holding you back, man. Have fun. I mean, if you want to, I encourage it. If you're whatever, cheers, buddy.
No, it's usually just the weekend thing, and it's if we go sledding, then we take a couple baddies with us. Or if we're working on the new shop, same thing. Or working on the property, we took down a couple trees today, so had a couple baddies around the fire.
For sure. Yep. It's going to be an interesting weekend for me at the cabin coming up with Easter weekend. Go to the cabin and everyone's going to be wanting to have beers around the fire too. And it's going to be like, oh, I totally want to have one.
Just get the non-alcoholic ones.
I don't enjoy beer for the flavor of it. I mean, I do, but... I'm a weird guy. I enjoy a good freaking hoppy IPA, one that really hits you in the kisser, right? I like those. Weird like that. Or an Irish stout.
Speaking my language, buddy.
No, Lisa, I've always been interested to know, where does all this come from? How does a lady growing up in Kelowna decide that she's going to start doing metal artwork? At what point did you start to do that? What was the spark in the eye kind of thing? What happened?
Well, right after high school, I went to college. And then I decided to take some time off. My goal was actually to be a conservation officer, and so I had applied to Malaspina on the island, and they wanted a more mature student. I had all the grades, but they wouldn't, I was too young, they wouldn't take me, they said. So I went to college in Kelowna, and then hated it. Oh, I just took general courses that would help out, math and computer and stuff. and then a guy, a family that I used to babysit for, Greg Lambert, he was like, oh, well, if you're looking for a job, in the meantime, before you go back to college or whatever, he's like, we're hiring. And he was a welder. So he got me a job at Northside Industries. That's where I started. I started there as a production worker, and then moved up to machine operator, and then Seamus Reimer, he taught me how to aluminum TIG weld. That was the very first welding I ever did. So I got my CWB, welded the top doors for the Whitkey garbage truck, and then I moved back to the tank line and did the aluminum fittings for the Western Star fuel tank. Welding was, my grandpa, he was a millwright, so as a kid I would always want to watch. My granny didn't like that. I was always a tomboy and didn't want to wear dresses and whatnot. But anyway, so I guess my grandpa sparked the interest because he would be welding in his garage in the back. And then, when I worked at Northside, it kind of grew. And then I went and got my welding ticket. And then when I was there, I found out about a blacksmithing program in Vernon. And so I've been working with metal for 4 years. At Northside, and then I went down to take for So Joe DeLismazic, he was my blacksmith teacher. I drove down to Vernon, and he's like, you know what? Just come for the day. You don't have to like commit to taking the course. He's like, let's just see if you like it. I was like, hey, cool. I don't have to drop a couple grand on something if it's not for me. And so I went down there, and like as soon as the metal came out of the forge, and I was just like, oh my God, like I've been working with metal for 4 years and did not know that it could move like that. And yeah. It instantly loved it. I was just like, where has this been? So then I took the blacksmithing on the weekend, completed my welding C ticket during the weekdays. And then when those two were done, I signed up to Community Futures to take my self-employment program course. Nice. Started my business. Yeah, in 2003, I was 24 years old.
Wow, buddy. That's awesome. Good for you.
You dive right into it then.
It's something that, I hope that I never have to live without. I love it. It's great. I've always like enjoyed drawing and building stuff. But this like incorporates all the art in me, like the creativity and functionality. Like do a little happy dance every time I complete a project.
So I before this podcast, I was scoping out your page. If you've probably seen, I've liked a bunch of your stuff. Checked out your website, and I've noticed that you're really good at incorporating welding with your forge work.
Well, thank you.
To the point where I was having a hard time seeing some of it, but I was like, I'm pretty sure that's welded. But
that's the goal.
I see a lot of your sculptures and work is like floral or like has a natural inspiration to it. Is that what you love making the most, or do you like doing the more industrial, like the range hoods that you've made and the sculptures?
Oh, I love the sculptures more for sure. Like I'm definitely inspired by nature. The range hoods are good and chimney caps are good and gates get to be a little bit more creative. Those are my paycheck. And then the sculptures, it started, I had done a couple before moving here, but then when we moved to Castlegar and I saw the sculpture walk, I took a break to get my kids to school age, so had a few years off. So that was my goal. Like I'm like, once the kids are in school, I'm gonna do a sculpture for the sculpture or apply, like hopefully. And so that was I guess 3 years ago now.
So how did that work? Did you have to apply to be on that? Did you just have to make something and hope that it fit the bill, or how does that program
work? I didn't want to make a sculpture and then hope that it would get in. So I submitted a drawing and you give like a good description of what it will be. And then you give like send in photos of your past work, and then it goes before a jury and they say yes or no.
And then it's the artwork that you put towards this, does it become property of the city? Is it a donation from you towards the city and the cause, or how do they pay you for it?
So they give you, when you deliver your sculpture, they give you like a 1 year lease on it. And then, and that's based on like the value that you give your sculpture. And then, that's not right. That's the second year. First year, every artist gets $1,000 when you deliver your sculpture.
That's sweet.
And then, And then there's lots of communities around here that will lease your sculpture, or the sculpture is up for sale. And so, like my very first one, the ladybug one, so it was in the sculpture walk in Castlegar for a year, and then last year it got leased by the city of Castlegar, and it's at the welcome sign. And then this spring it's going to Nelson, so it gets leased by a local business that's leasing it. So yeah, and then the Flight of the Bee was in the sculpture walk last year, and it's going to, oh, the city of Castlegar leased it. Yeah, so that's good. So it's leased for this coming year. And then Wisdom, which is down in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, a town down there leased it for 2 years. So yeah, it's all like, yeah, it's cool. I think it's for me, it's a great way to get your foot into the art life.
Definitely. Like, you're making me think a lot of Paul Reimer and his work right now, because he does a ton of work for the town of Cranbrook. Kimberly, he's done some work for as well, if I'm not mistaken. And that's, as an artist, that is something to aspire towards big time, is having your work on display as a public piece that everyone gets to enjoy. Like, that's, regardless of how much money is involved in it, the volume of gratification that an artist gets from that is just so huge. So one day that would make me feel so good to see a piece of my work on display. It's like, in the Winnipeg, we have a central area that's a hot spot for tourists called the Forks. It's like where the two rivers in Winnipeg connect, and there's a big mall kind of thing there, skate park, museum, all sorts of stuff. They have big events there all the time, and it's a great place for people to come and hang out in the summertime and be outdoors and stuff. And there are a bunch of art pieces around there already, and it is one of the things that I wish for in my lifetime, is to see one of my art pieces end up either at the Forks or downtown Winnipeg somewhere. I donated a piece of art to my hometown of Snow Lake last summer. I donated a very large flower to it. No pain, nothing. It was just like, it felt, and it's so good to know that a piece of my art is going to be, you know, bringing people joy in this town that's so small, and there's not a lot to do there. So, yeah. How does that work for your business, the lease side of it? Is that something that you have to take on fully yourself and manage, or is that part of this program that you're dealing with through the town?
It's part of the sculpture walk, so they take care of all of that. Like, they do the advertising, and anybody that wants to lease or buy a sculpture, contacts Castlegar Sculpture Walk. And so the city they're not actually putting on the sculpture walk, because they will lease like a sculpture, but gotcha. and they're definitely helping it out, but the company, I guess, or entity is Castlegar Sculpture Walk.
Like a non-profit or something like that.
It's a really sweet gig.
No kidding.
Like, that's awesome.
Brilliant.
Should bring that to every town.
Yeah, they did it to rejuvenate downtown, because when some like new businesses, like Canadian Tire and stuff, moved into the Castlegar, they went to uptown, and so downtown kind of lost a lot of the smaller businesses. So then they needed something to rejuvenate downtown, and this is what they've come up with. And they've been doing it for years, like longer than I've lived here. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's we stopped in town there. Like, I've been to Castlegar a few times, and I don't remember seeing it the first time I was in Castlegar. I'm trying to think back as to how long ago that was. 2008, I think, was my first time in Castlegar, maybe. And I don't recall seeing any art walk when I was there for that time, but I was just there a few years ago, and we went to the Safeway, and as we're driving towards the Safeway, I start seeing all these art pieces on the sidewalk, and it's like, what is this? This is the most amazing thing I've ever seen! Let's go for a walk! I gotta check all this out! And me and the kid, my wife and her mom went into the Safeway to do some grocery shopping, and me and the kid went for a good half hour, hour long walk and checked out all the art, took pictures with a bunch of stuff. And oh man, it's absolutely brilliant move on the side of the city to have done something like that.
Totally, yeah.
And like LaRoquez was saying, like, that's like every city and town should do that. That's brilliant to give artists that, like, what's the word I'm looking for? That full package, man. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah,
you get paid, you get displayed, and they manage like all the leasing and all that after the fact or selling. Like, that's awesome. That's
great. And they take care of the insurance too.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Just the incentive to make art, that incentive it gives people. Like, you literally are like, I want to go make art now, right?
Cool. Yeah.
That's super cool. So what do you do for inspiration towards your art? You mentioned you're inspired by nature a lot, but what is it that brings you to make a new piece? Does it start with an idea and then you look to expand that idea, or does it start with something that turns into an idea?
Well, because the sculpture walk, like, everything is due in May, and actually, like, a lot of them seem to all be due in May. So then that sculpture's done, and then you kind of have not a year, I guess. You have to have your application in for the next year in, I think it's October or November. So you have like that good gap of time to think of something that you want to do. And so like this bison head that I'm working on right now, my youngest son is totally into like fossils and bones and collecting antlers and things like that. And we were driving, I think, to Creston. He's like, Mom, you should make a skull. Like, ah, that's not really my thing. I'm like, wait a minute. If I make art inside the skull, and so he was like the little spark behind that one.
That's awesome.
Like, yeah, if I see something, like, I'll take a picture of it and just be like, hey, I'm just gonna let that sit there, and then just wait and see, like, if that's what I want to do for next year. And some of the sculpture walks, like the one I'm doing in Oak Bay, they have a theme. So that one was, the theme is beyond the surface. So that, I just, yeah, put it in the back of my head. And I wasn't sure that I was going to apply to that one. And then I was like, well, I don't know. I just came up with an idea. And then I drew it out. I was like, I don't know if I should apply. I kind of crunched for time. And I'm like, screw it. I've got the drawing. Whatever. I'll send it in. And then they accepted it. So, woohoo!
Sometimes getting accepted isn't exactly a jump for joy, because now it's like, oh, shoot. Now I have to do it.
Well, it just puts like I love doing it, but it just puts like a time crunch on it for sure.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah. And especially if you're in the middle of a situation like you are with building a new shop. And how old are your kids?
My oldest is 11 and my youngest is 9.
Oh, dude. Yeah. That's a busy time of life, man. Are they in sports or anything like that? Or
no. Well, Logan was playing volleyball, but just like at the school, we have snowmobiles and they've got dirt bikes, and we just try to be outside as much as possible. So that's kind of their...
That's their sports. Their life.
Yeah.
Dirt biking, snowmobiling, it's a sport activity. I mean, look at the guys in, look at what the guys with Red Bull do on snowmobiles, crying aloud, right? Like, I'll be honest. Like, my dad used to go to Revelstoke for snowmobiling lots. He'd go to Yellowstone for snowmobiling. And I just was like, I don't get it. Like, we live in Manitoba. There's snow here. What's the big deal? And then I see these guys snowmobiling in the mountains. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. But holy frick. That is crazy. I don't know if I could handle that. I would have said the same thing about snowboarding when I was a kid. If I would have, like, the first time I went to the mountains and I saw mountains for the first time in real life on a snowboard, it was like, holy shit, this is the real deal. Like, wow. Growing up in the prairies, yeah. Man, I'll tell you, man, that's the mountains are huge.
I haven't spent a lot of time in the prairies. I've been far east is Alberta. there's just so much of BC to explore.
Oh, dude, tell me about it. Tell me some of your favorite places in BC to go to. What are some of your top places to knock off? If you were to have a friend that was going to come to visit you for 2 weeks, say, so that, you know, you guys had enough time that you could get over all the family visiting and stuff like that, and it's okay, now we've got some loose time, I gotta show you the goods. Where are we going, hun?
Well, yeah, I'm a big fan of Kootenays, so yeah, Nakusp is like a really cute town, and if you're going that way, you gotta check out the hot springs. And then Revy's beautiful. And I guess because I grew up in the Okanagan, I don't tend to go over there anymore, just because there's so many little nooks and crannies in the Kootenays that are still waiting for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as used to school, like that kind of northern desert, that is pretty cool to check out.
Where is that?
And then Vesuvius. It's the most northern desert. Yeah.
Right.
Like Cranbrook, Fernie, those are all gorgeous too. And
hell yeah. You guys fish?
Yeah, my husband loves to fish. I like fishing. I like the boat better.
where are the good places to go fishing where you guys are?
Well, Castlegar is right on the Columbia River, so there's and the Kootenay River actually meet in Castlegar, so all along the Columbia is awesome, and where we are, we're like at the bottom of all the dams of Kootenay River, so you can't go too far up it, like you got to put in different locations, but he fishes for walleye and trout.
Do you get salmon where you guys are?
There's kokanee, so lock salmon.
Yeah, okay. Cool. I wasn't too sure if they are that far up into the mountains or not. I'm not a huge knowledgeable person when it comes to fishing, especially out west. I kind of know what's going on here in Manitoba when it comes to fishing, but even at that, I'm like, we have like what are those eels or like that will like fuck you up? What are they called? Lampreys or something? I think am I thinking of the right thing? Maybe I'm thinking of the wrong thing, but they're like nasty looking things. They're fucking nasty. Like they look like out of a horror movie, dude. We got these things in our lake. Like what? Ugh, I don't know if I want to go back in that lake. But yeah, you get. Get crazy shit everywhere in this world, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like the sturgeon are in the Columbia and in Arrow, and they're like big docile fish,
yeah.
Right? But they're still amazing to see.
Yep. Totally.
Always wanted to go fish some sturgeon. Never had the opportunity to.
So huge.
Yeah. You're not allowed to fish for them in the Columbia River, but in the freezer you can.
Okay. You guys got a really cool swimming area in Castlegar, I'm pretty sure is where, pretty sure it was in Castlegar, where it's right beside the river. Like the public swimming pond. Have you ever been there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Millennium. Yeah, I've taken my kids there, and I think we had Logan's birthday party there. The bike park's right in there, too. So, that is a good spot to take the kids, for sure.
It's pretty crazy. You're swimming in this, like, super calm little pool, and, like, right next to you is this crazy rushing river. It's like, is this river is rushing so hard, it's like a freaking horizontal waterfall, dude. It's insane.
That is a pretty turbulent spot right there, for sure.
Yeah,
there's some pretty wicked spots to swim in the rivers, though, like where it's a lot calmer.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
it's a big river. It's probably cold as frick, though.
The Columbia's, it's a little warmer than Kootenay. They're cold. They're mountain lakes. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's that's my wife. I've wanted to be in BC my whole life, and it just kind of ended up being that there was this point of time in my life where I could have made it happen, but I met my wife, and it was like, mountains, hot girl, mountains, hot girl it is. And, yeah. I mean, I tried to convince her that we should go to the mountains. She's like, dude, my whole family's in Winnipeg. Why would I go to BC? And her whole family went through this whole crazy thing, too, because her brother had been murdered right before I met her. And it was like this fucking crazy scenario for a while there. It was like, yeah, who am I to try to tear you away from your family when this is going on? Like, I get it, dude. I get it. We're not going to BC, but we're going to go to BC and visit whenever we can, because it's freaking awesome there. Let's go snowboarding. Let's go in the summertime and check out the mountains and the hot springs. Like, what are some of your, you mentioned the cusp. What about, Ainsworth? You been to Ainsworth?
Yeah. We took Levi there, I think, for second birthday or something. And I went there as a kid too. It's awesome.
Going through the cave.
Yeah, that's cool.
What about trying to think of the one that's in Swan?
White Swan? Or
no. You know what I'm talking about, where it's like off the side of a logging road?
Yeah, I went there as a kid. I haven't been there as an adult, but we went there as a kid, yeah.
Those are the things I'm like, this is what I'm coming to BC for. Like, there's Radium Hot Springs, where it's this like massive like public pool. I mean, Ainsworth is kind of a public pool too, but Radium's crazy public, and I'm just like, no thank you, I have no interest in going there whatsoever.
Yeah, I've never been to Radium.
They haven't been far into British Columbia, but the one place I wish I would go back to is the Cedar Rainforest.
Yeah, that's right by Revelstoke.
So I went to Revelstoke with the wife on a road trip once when we used to live in Alberta, and we stopped there, and I could have spent my whole life in those woods.
Yeah, I hear you, buddy.
It's something to see.
Yeah.
And just to say, like, this isn't Canada, like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's beautiful. We took Logan there for one of his birthdays, so that's, the Three Valley Gap and the Enchanted Forest. That's the other one.
Yes.
Yeah, we stopped there. Didn't like that one as much as like the nature, like walking through like just in the nature without the sculptures and all that.
Yeah.
The wood carvings. I think they were wood, right?
Yeah.
Been a while since I've been there. It was fun to see, but I prefer the nature walk a lot more than
totally.
The Enchanted Forest.
Yeah. The kids like that.
Yeah.
I think probably the best snowboarding I've ever had in my life was in that area too, like Revelstoke. Snowboarding in Revelstoke is just, holy crap, dude. So crazy.
Yeah, I snowboarded there, snowmobiled there, and the snowboarding was mostly Big White.
If you liked that area, man, if you ever get a chance to go to the island, oh, dude, just equally as awesome as that entire little area of rainforest. The whole, like, a good portion of the island is like that. I'm trying to think, like, between Nanaimo and the west side of the island. I can't remember the name. It's the Tofino, yeah. Between Nanaimo and Tofino, that stretch of highway is like all crazy huge trees and just beautiful in there.
Cool.
Nice.
Maybe let's talk about some blacksmithing stuff a little bit here.
I'll start with a question.
Okay. Yes.
So I'm going back to, you gave us that, you know, you went and took a course for blacksmithing after. Yep. While getting your welding.
Yeah.
I want to know what the first thing you forged on your own without the blacksmith course was.
After the blacksmith course?
Yeah. Oh. Like the first thing that came out of your shop.
Oh. Man. Oh, that's so long ago. Probably like wine rack. I made a few of those and I'd say that's probably like the first small project that I did.
Can I embellish on that question a little bit, dude?
Go ahead.
So there's something that I've noticed with blacksmithing, and it's come up before with somebody else, that you'll notice something about blacksmiths as they go through their endeavor in this craft, that when you start off, you learn a certain aspect, and you start to lean really heavy on that aspect for a while until you like pick up a new aspect and you start leaning really heavy on that aspect and then another one and another one. And then like eventually you finally have this huge array of skill that you can like start to create something that's actually like, you know, really unique and not holding on to that one specific, you know, aspect or skill, right? So like, for example, a lot of blacksmiths, one of the things they start off with learning is twists, and everything they make has twists in it. Yeah. What was it for you with your beginning projects that was your like aspect that you leaned on super heavily?
Leaves. I love the vines and the leaves, like right off the top. Yep. And I did like the twists too. I did lots of, like when I first started out, I would volunteer for like the pioneer fairs and stuff like that. And, I'd have like all the old timers around my little booth and asking me how I did this and how I did that. And, and it was fun. It was good. Yeah. Fine, please. Sorry.
So nature oriented.
Yeah.
Kind of start off with what you really like doing, really.
Yeah, no, I still like doing the leaves. Like it's something I still like to do. And like when I started out, like I had a website, but there wasn't like this huge like hive mind like there is now, you know? And now, like, this bison sculpture I'm working on, I've never made leaves like that chevron pattern before. And so I looked it up on YouTube. I'm like, well, let's see how it's done. Like, oh, yeah, okay, I can do that. So I think that's really one great thing about technology is, like, sharing our knowledge. Like, and also, like, before knife, the whole knife making thing, like in Forged in Fire, there wasn't, reinvigorated craft, I think.
Yeah.
Like it brought a lot more attention to it. And, and got a lot more people in it, but a lot more knowledge sharing, which I think is great.
It revitalized the community, that's for sure.
Yeah, big time. If you were to say that there were certain influences on the community outside of Forged and Fire, what else do you think was a big influence on us?
Well, here in the Kootenays, it would be the Kootenay School of Art. They've definitely been keeping the craft going for a long time.
That's out of Nelson?
Yeah, yeah. And I think, yeah, Instagram, and like that's where I've found lots of other makers. And Pinterest is good too. I like going on there to look at different projects and stuff too.
That's not one that comes up a lot, but there is definitely a lot of stuff on Pinterest for sure.
Yeah.
And I like to browse, I hate to admit this, but I like to browse Etsy for ideas. It's interesting some of the stuff you'll see on there that you can just like grasp maybe like a small detail of something and be like, I kind of like that, just like that one little detail of how they did that and apply it to your own work. And I find that that's a huge thing that I do, is I'll look at people's work and just like little details and be like, I really like how they did that. Yeah. So leaves, for example, I don't know what your process for leaves would be, but there's many different processes for leaves, bringing it to the basic shape. But then once you bring it to the basic shape, adding in some detail to it to really make it pop. One of the things that people do is they take a chisel to it and they'll add in veining with a chisel, right? But a lot of the times what I saw people doing was just taking a normal flat point chisel, whack on one side, whack on the other side, and do like an alternating pattern up each side of the main vein, right? So that you get your sloped cuts. But each one is exactly the same size and depth, essentially, and you can tell that it was just a straight chisel, and it's like, needs to be more to that. But I didn't understand at the time what more it needed. I just knew it needed more. And I started making leaves like that, and I looked at them, I was like, no, I mean, I get it, yeah, that's a leaf, but there needs to be more to it than this. There's something missing. And then as time went on, saw some YouTube videos, and one of the things I saw was a guy using a curved chisel, and he was rolling his chisel as he was doing the veins. And by doing that, he was able to control the size of the vein and the direction of it. And I was just like, oh, that's the missing detail right there. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Writing that one down. We're done for tonight. Off to the shop we go. We're going to practice that. So, you know, I don't know where I was. Where did I go from? There was a reason I went into that. I don't know.
Where you get inspiration from.
Yeah.
So for me lately, it's been my parents, because they travel a lot.
Oh, crazy.
And yeah, they keep an eye out for any kind of iron work that's cool and neat. So cool. Not too long ago, they traveled in Europe, and they went through, I think, like 6 or 7 countries.
Wow.
And every time they were like seeing any kind of like railing or iron piece and like historical castles and stuff like that, they would send it over to me to just look at.
Cool.
And I find myself looking up like European blacksmithing a lot more for inspiration these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think it's absolutely on like a different level, and there's a lot of history there that we can definitely have down here.
Those Russians, dude.
Yeah. The German blacksmithing is really, really interesting too. And Italian, and it's crazy that you can look at their work and just go like, it's not the same. It just isn't.
What was the name of the forging festival that Leah Aropach went to it in Italy? Can't remember the name of it now. Stila C I can't remember the name of it. But, dude, if you somehow find out what I'm talking about and look it up, that's going to work real well. Fuck, I'm
brilliant. We'll have to go on Via's page and look.
It is. Good luck fishing through her feed because she's got so much that she posts, but it will be in there. But Stia, I'm pretty sure it's called Stia. It's a forging event that happens in Italy, and the freaking work that was at this thing was just like, holy my. Even, okay, so when somebody like Leah says that she was mind blown by the work that she saw, and you look at the work she does, and it's just like, okay, if you're saying you're mind blown, like, yeah, and then you go in to look at it, and it's just like, I don't get it, dude. I don't get it. You know, like, yeah. I would definitely put yourself on a level with Leah and the work you do. I look at you at the work you do and the work she does, and I see a lot of, like, you guys are going in different directions as to what you're inspired by. Like, she's got that alien inspiration or whatever, yeah. And you've got more of a nature inspiration. But at the same time, there's a collision in the middle somewhere there with the two of you.
So, that's awesome. Thank you very much. She's
sure.
Awesome.
She is. Yeah. Yeah. Artists that you look up to.
Well, yeah. So I started following Leah from watching that Metal Shop Masters.
Yeah.
I like watching her. And, well, I mean, Mark from Mystic Forge, his work is amazing. Ted Howell, he passed away, but he was awesome. I used to contract to Southwest Forge in Summerlin, and so I'd drive down there and make a couple hundred handles, and then I'd go over to his shop, and he was so good at sharing knowledge, which I hadn't experienced before. Everybody else was very secretive, and I walked in there and I was like, you know, I don't know how to do the pineapple twist. He's like, well, let's do it. So we just fired up the forge and we did it. Like that, it was just like, and yeah, the way that he shared his knowledge and then like appreciation for tools. And he was always like, Lisa, go bigger, use bigger material. Like just always encourage. So yeah, he's really.
I think that's a mistake a lot of blacksmiths do. They start with small material, and that I know I'm one of those ones. I start off with like quarter inch and like 3/8 inch bar and trying to make stuff and just fighting the material the whole time. Starting off with bigger is definitely better.
Yeah. Since I've not been able to use my trip hammer, I've definitely reverted back to smaller material.
Yeah. Since I got my hydraulic press belt, I have suddenly appreciated not using a heavy hammer. Like I used to swing the 4-pound hammer hard. Like I'd make a hammer by hand in one evening by myself. And after doing that, like, you know, a few times, you start to get to a point where you're just like, why am I beating myself up like this when I can use machinery? What's wrong with me? Like, yeah, I like to do it by hand. It was enjoyable, but man, we're human beings. Our bodies can only take so much. And if you fuck yourself up at an early age and, you know, end up growing to regret that, like, that's, I don't want to be that person, man. I already have regrets. I don't need more.
I'm at that point now. I need machinery.
Yeah. I just picked up another hydraulic cylinder today, actually, another 5-inch. It's only got an 8-inch stroke on it, so I think that one's going to go to its own press. But actually, maybe I'll replace the cylinder on the press I've got right now with it. It beef up the amount of pressure I get. I'll lose a little bit of speed, but that's okay. Anyways. Did I ever ask you who your inspirations are, Laurel Kez?
I don't remember because we had a podcast a long time ago. My inspirations these days have been pretty much anyone who does anything organic, floral. I don't have anyone really in the top of my mind because I scroll through a lot.
You know you want to see me.
Well, yeah, of course.
But that has nothing to do with the floral work. That has to do with the private pictures I send you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, lots of inspiration there.
Inspiration to grow, baby, grow.
Yeah. So every end of year, I kind of reflect back on the year I've had in my shop and where I want to bring it and what I want to do in the new year.
Yeah.
And right now, I'll be honest, I've had a couple of projects that I'm doing, but I'm not enjoying doing as much. So I feel like I need to revitalize my love for blacksmithing and do something that I want to do.
Wait a minute. Why haven't you spoken to me about this, dude? What's going on?
You know all about this.
Oh, do I? Okay. Maybe I'm...
Yeah, you know all about this.
Tell us more. Tell us more. Spill the beans.
So I've had an order, fairly new to blacksmithing. I've been doing it for 3 years. And I've had an order for 2 years sitting on my workbench.
Oh.
That I've just been putting off because mainly I didn't have the tools at the time to take the order. And it's for a family friend, so it's not like... It's a big deal, but it's just an order I accepted and I want to see it completed. And it's a set of chisels.
Oh, dude.
You know about this.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm at the end of that project now. I just have the steel is hardened and I just got to put an edge on them and clean them up and polish them. So I'm at the end of that project, and it's just one of those projects that's been lingering for so long that I'm not enjoying it. Like, I'm not feeling it, right? And now people are asking me to make chisels, and the answer is no.
Yeah.
Because I know I don't like doing them.
Smart man.
It's just a fine boundary, so, like, I think instead of saying yes to everything.
So I've spent some nights because I share a wall with my kid's room. I spent some nights plasma cutting some roses and some lilies to get back into the organic art side of things. And that is kind of where I'm gravitating towards because last year or 2 years ago, I did some roses and absolutely loved it.
Great.
Loved the whole process. So I'm going to get back into something I love for a while. I'm pulling back from commission work unless it's something I really want to do. I've started saying, I think it was on your podcast, Lando, with,
Derek
Melton.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I've started saying no.
Yeah.
Right. And, that's been kind of hard because small shop, you kind of want to grow, but I've just started saying no to some projects that I don't want to do, or I give the, I don't want to do it price. In those cases, and yeah, so my inspiration has been anything kind of natural and organic, which I was excited when I saw your page, Lisa, that you were into that.
Cool.
So I guess I'll be taking a little bit of inspiration from your page from here on.
Yay. You know why I invited you here there now, Polly?
Yeah, I know why now. It all makes sense. So yeah, so I'm going into that night field again of the more art side. I've been doing a lot of practical pieces lately, like axes and, well, I made a tomahawk. I made the chisels.
I think you make
timber framing slick.
Awesome roses, dude, man. I'm happy to hear you're getting back to it, dude.
I am. And I'm trying to, make them better than the last batch. So I'm pushing myself with the art side of things.
Real quick. Roses. I was just talking to Lawrence about this, and this is something that I kind of wonder about. I've never shown this to anybody before, and I hesitate to even talk about it because I feel like it's kind of my little, like, trademark thing that I do with the roses. But those swage dishes that I've been making, those originated from my roses. I've had a few people ask me about it now too, because they think that it's a, I'm like in this like competition with Brian Hose where when it comes to the coffee scoops, and it's like, no, I have no interest in coffee scoops. That was never my game plan to worry about coffee scoops. I like, this started because of roses. I started making my roses, and when you curl the petals up, they tend to want to put a little bit of a bend where the end of the cup mark is. And I've never liked that look. I hate how it looks like metal. And I'm like, no, these need to be either put on top of a steak and have that little dent from the bend mark hammered out so it's nice and flat. Or what if I had a cup of some sort that I could put this in, and then a top tool, and then I put the next layer on top of that with the top tool, and the next layer, and I just stack all the layers in the same cup with the top tool. They all match the same contour then, right? So that's where that developed from.
Cool.
I kind of figured it was a play on that little welded piece that you were starting to use when you started doing the roses.
That's it. That's the one that's where it started. I took a piece of pipe and I welded a plug to the bottom of it, and then I flared the pipe out a little bit, and that was my first cup for making roses. But okay, where did I even find this swage from? I've got a swage. It's like a block of steel that's like 4-inch by 4-inch square, and on each long side of it, it's got a set of holes. One side has got one hole, and then three of the other sides have three holes, and each hole is a different size, but they're like, most swage blocks, the cups on most swage blocks are pretty shallow. These are deep. These are like half radius deep, which is not, you don't find that normally, right? So I was like, this is perfect. And that's more what I'm aiming to with the swage blocks, is try to get that real nice depth.
My Newman has deep cups.
I like big cups.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lisa.
Well, since we're talking about tools, Lisa, let's talk about your anvil. What's the size? Where did you get it from?
It was a wedding present. friends of the family. When we got, I think actually they gave it to me when I started my business. And then they, when Clay and I got engaged, they said, well, there's your wedding present. So I was happy with that. It's a Peter Wright. It's 150 pounds. And I'm still using it. It's my main anvil. I've picked up a few other smaller ones, which I've used like when I'm instructing or taking like to a demo place or something. But that Peter Wright's been with me from day one.
That's a very useful wedding present.
Yeah, that's
one. Yeah, that's pretty freaking sweet, dude. Lucky.
Yeah. It's a
man that knows the key to your heart.
Well, it wasn't from my husband. It was just friends of my parents.
Oh, well. They know how to make a lady happy. in lieu of Nick not being here, what's your go-to hammer?
Me?
Yeah.
I have a cross beam again that I've got a couple that I like, but recently when I went down to the agrarian school, Jeffrey gave me a hammer, and it's awesome. It's got a twist on the end. And so it's definitely taken me like a little bit to get used to, because I'm not used to that. It's a really nice hammer technique on it. It's different, but I really like it. Anyways, check out Jeffrey's tool.
Jeffrey Funk. Nice. That's pretty awesome. You got one of his hammers. That's awesome. Man, that's a name I haven't heard of for a while. Wow.
Yeah.
Do you know of Blacksmither Radio? the podcast that kind of predates ours?
No.
So, Victoria Patty. Aw, thanks. Victoria Patty had a podcast prior to myself starting a podcast, and she was essentially the inspiration for me to start a podcast. When her podcast ended, I reached out to her right away, and I was like, what's going on? Like, can I do anything by any chance? Like, I don't know you from a hole in the wall, but if there's anything I can do to keep your podcast going, I loved it, like, so much. And, you know, it just, she kind of gave me some prep work on what I would need to do if I wanted to start a podcast, and was willing to be a manager for the podcast if need be or whatever. And it was just like, there was so much humming and hawing as like, is this the right move for me? And then through the Blacksmith Guild, it happened. It's been awesome since. But she was a huge proponent of Jeffrey Funk's work. She talked about him all the time. And it's just like, man, I haven't heard that name since. It's awesome to hear that name again. When were you down there?
I went down there in June, because I wanted to build a new forge. And I found him on Instagram. A couple people here had, Leo had mentioned that that Jeffrey's forge was really good. Right. Yep. And so then, I contacted Jeffrey, and he said that, like, I could buy one off of him if I wanted. And I said that I really wanted to make my own. And he invited me to come down. So I went down there and took tons of pictures and tons of video, and just wrote tons of notes. And then came back home and built my forge, like, just kind of in between projects, like whenever I had a spare hour. I was like, okay, work on the forge again. And I got it going in December. So it took me a while, but it's sweet. I'm really happy with it. And Jeffrey was a big help. Huge help.
Have you seen that? Have you seen that LaRocca as her forge? The barn?
Yeah, I saw the barn. It's really cool.
That front door is my, personally, and as far as I'm concerned, the best design for a door that's out there. Like, you can't beat. I've seen a lot of guys, and no, there's no hate here. Like, I'm not trying to throw digs at anybody about their designs, but, and mine does this, like, my doors slide from the sides. Like, I've got two bricks that slide open from side to side so that you create an opening by doing that. But the problem with doing that is that what direction does heat want to go? It wants to go up, right? Yeah. So if you open your doors centrally from side to side, you're creating an opening allowing the heat to come out of the highest point of your forge. So you're allowing the most heat out of your forge that you can. Whereas if you've got a door that rises upward and creates a gap underneath, well, you're trapping the majority of the heat in your forge by doing it that way. You're going to lose less heat. It's probably honestly minuscule, but I have noticed, depending on how open the gap is on my forge and how long I leave it for, I can lose a significant amount of heat from my forge if I leave it wide open. And I would assume that, this is assumption, that having that small gap at the bottom, you could almost leave that open all the time to allow just, your small pieces that you're putting in and out and barely lose any heat at all.
I usually have it, like, going up and down, like, depending on the size of what I'm working on and stuff. It's good. But, I mean, I used the two brick opening for 20 years, or maybe not that long. Years or something, but because before that I used coal, but it was time to upgrade, and so I got
the one thing I really like is that you made art out of the doors as well with the flower in the front.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of people who build forge and add like forge work into the forge. Like I saw one that was like a dragon's head.
Oh yeah.
And like those are just like they're cool tools, but let's make them cooler, right? Let's make them show our work.
No, I was feeling kind of like how you mentioned earlier, like kind of frustrated and whatnot, and so like I'm just gonna make something for me, and it just changed my mood, and it made me happier about the whole project.
I need to do a little bit of that right now. I've been busting my butt off for the last while doing projects for other people, and I'm just like, it's about time I do something for myself, like a feel-good project that, you know, I've been living in this house for 2 years now, and there's a few things that I'd really like to build for the house that I'm like, I don't have the time for it, but I think it's at a point now where I need to just maybe take a week and be like, okay, you need to build something for you that is going to stay in the house that you're actually, like, I've built stuff for my wife. She's got a bouquet of flowers now that's just like absolutely deadly. I love it, and that's saying something. Like, as an artist, if you actually love the work you've done, and that's a good thing, right? But
I did see the bouquet. It is nice, Lando.
Thank you. And I appreciate that it's there and that I get to enjoy it too, but it wasn't, I would never build that for me, really. Like, I don't know. I would.
You would.
Yeah. I'm weird like that. I don't know, but I need to build a towel rack or paper towel hanger. Our paper towel sits on the counter. I need nightstands for the bedroom. We don't have proper nightstands. We've got one nightstand, and and we need a new TV stand now because our TV blew up on us right before Christmas, and we went on Boxing Day and bought a new TV. What do we do? Well, let's buy the bigger TV. Now it doesn't fit on the TV stand. It's like, I'll build a new TV stand. Jeez, don't you have enough things to do, buddy? Do you find yourself doing anything like that ever to yourself, where you just kind of you're like, I'm putting too much on my plate?
Oh, my plate's always way too full, like always. I have two young kids and an acreage and a house and chickens and a garden and then a business. So
I'm building a shop for 3 years.
What do you do to manage that? How do you stay task focused? How do you know what tasks there are that you need to accomplish that haven't been accomplished yet? Do you make a list? You know, do you have goal sets of timelines of when things need to be done by? What's your approach to that?
If something is urgent, or if I know that I'll forget it, I keep a list beside my laptop and I'll just write it down on there. And like, whether it's like, oh, make sure you email this client back, or like, otherwise, like, my weekdays are work, like they're scheduled for work, and weekends are for catching up on building a new shop or gardening or cleaning the house and like all that stuff. Like, sometimes I'll have to push a project to the back of the table. And so then, like, this gym kneecap, I'm staring at it right now. it's waiting to be finished, but I had to wait to hear from the contractor. So I was like, well, in the meantime, I'm going to start on my sculpture because there's a deadline with that too. So. This
is
a list. I like lists.
So, assuming if you like lists, that you ensure to keep details of all your projects too, on, you know, what aspects you need to accomplish with them, right? How do you keep track of that depth of the of each project now? Like, we've got a good idea of, you know, your you're orientated on accomplishing things in the right order or whatever, but what do you do as far as remembering what it is that each project has for details? Do you create like a portfolio for each project, or is it as simple as jotting down notes?
Well, like for custom work or even with my sculptures, I do a drawing and that's my blueprint basically. And like in my notes, I'll write down the dimensions and, yeah, stuff like that. The drawing is what I go off of. And if I'm doing it for a customer, then like I've submitted a drawing to them, so they're going to get some sort of representation of that.
Do you send customers some sort of basic form with all of your work, or do you have you created some sort of documentation that is essentially your go-to document for every project? You're like, this is the document that I use for every project because it lists it gives me a place to list the details, customer name, contact information, deadlines, all that kind of stuff. Or is that how do you go about doing that?
I'm totally old school and it's pen and paper.
Yeah.
And it depends. Like if it's local, then like I go to their home and just take notes and take my measuring tape and ask questions as we go along. And they've usually done their homework on like what they're interested in, or they want to tie it into like they already have a railing and they want me to make a fireplace round, or you know, like just things like that. And so just take notes or take pictures. That works good too. Old school, pen and paper.
Well, the reason I asked that is that's one of the things that I don't want to say I struggle with it necessarily, but I have noticed that it's one of the things I could improve on for sure, because I've been all over the place with the way I write things down. You know, like one of the big things I've done a lot lately is table legs for a guy that does live etch tables, and he'll call me up or he'll message me and be like, hey, I need so many table legs this size, can you have it done by this date and how much is it going to cost? I text message him back the details. I grab a piece of paper, notepad thing, and I write down those details on the notepad, throw it on the bench, and it starts to collect dust as I work on the project. And every once in a while, I'll look back and be like, yeah, those are the dimensions I needed. Okay, that's that. And it hasn't failed me yet, but what happens when you've got 20 pieces of paper on your bench thrown all mixed in with each other that are all different projects, and you pick one up and you go 10 by 20. Was that 10 by 20 tall or 10 by 20 wide? Shit. Damn it. I can't remember now. And you gotta, like, you know, some little details like that. And I have foreseen myself walking into that situation, because if it gets too busy, these notepads aren't going to work out. And one of the things that I've heard from somebody doing is, what do you call that? Like a order thing, like order picker, like what restaurants have, where you get the little carousel. Mm-hmm. You know what waitresses do, right?
Yeah, a little carousel where they just clip in.
Yeah, so you can do something like that and have a little carousel, so all of your notes actually stay like up and organized and don't get mixed in with things. You're not going to lose it and this and that. One of the things Justin did this at Lamoureux that I was impressed is he got clipboards. He went and bought like 12 clipboards or something like that, and he has a little thing on the wall that had slots for each clipboard or whatever, like a little slanted hole, and up the wall each clipboard can go in the slot. And he made a spreadsheet, a basic spreadsheet that says, you know, customer's name, customer's contact information, details, this and that. And this is kind of where I got a little bit of what I was saying earlier from, is like, that's smart, dude. Like, that is organized, and I really appreciate that. And I need to bring that into my life. And I've been picking at other people. Like, what do you do when it comes to this? What about you, LaRoquez? What's your way of approaching that?
So my way of approaching it is I have a bin on top of my cabinet, which is all of my past paperwork and my templates. So if I do a template on, say, a feather hook, it's going to be in that bucket. That's my template. I usually spray paint those so they're a different color, so I don't end up forging it by mistake. And all of my measurements and current projects are pinned to my with a magnet to my cabinet. So every piece of paper on my cabinet is work I need to do. Once that work is done, I take the paperwork, throw it on top in the bucket, and that way it's out of my way. And that's a good way gauge for me to see exactly what I need to do. It's like, if that cabinet's full of paperwork, then I'm probably not going to want to take more orders that are time sensitive, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if it's empty, I got nothing on the go.
I have a binder in the shop here, so then my current project is in that. And then anything else I leave in the house at my desk, and I have another folder there, and so all that stays there until I am ready to bring it out here. And I typically like to complete a project before I start another one, because I like to completely focus on that project. That's just the way my brain works. So that's how I do it. I do have kind of staging areas like what you were talking about. I do like to be very, very organized.
I think you have to be in order to run a successful business. Organization is one of the key points. Discipline has become the forefront to me anyways. To be a successful business is discipline. Second, I think, is organization. What would you add to that list, Lisa?
Those are good ones. Yeah, I think work ethic and customer relations. I think understanding what people, what they're asking for. I think also just being kind and courteous. I don't treat other people how you want to be treated. If they're coming to you for a custom piece of work, especially nowadays, you can buy just about anything you want online. So if they're coming to you to make something special, then I want to give them that feeling.
I like to give people feelings too, if you know what I'm saying. I think that's actually a very, very key point too, is customer relations. We brought this up before on the podcast, that, and exactly what you're saying, you can almost buy anything you want online nowadays. Why would you go to me or LaRoquez or to yourself, Lisa, to buy something specific that you can buy online? It comes down to a relationship has been forged in some sort of way, and I'm not talking about at the anvil with your hammer. I'm talking about in life, in some sort of way, there was a connection. Atoms and nucleuses and all those things combined and smashed each other, and they got all excited and do the things that steel does when you quench it, right? And does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it does. I've been doing a lot of marketing courses on my own.
Cool.
Yeah.
The big thing with customer relations and sales and all that, and small business and entrepreneurship and crafting and all that stuff, the main focus is that you're not necessarily selling your work. Yes, you are selling your work, but you need to sell you.
Yep.
You're the product.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing I've taken away from those courses, is that, you know, the work I do is obviously the selling point, but you need someone who's willing to pay for you to do it, especially in the market we're in right now, where you go online and buy anything.
Yeah.
So you need to have someone who values you and you're the product they're buying into.
Don't take key points. There's a Facebook thing and whatever. I don't even know how far beyond Facebook it goes, but Soft White Underbelly, don't take points from that on how to sell yourself. That's bad jives there. But
I don't think I've seen that one.
And Soft White Underbelly, holy fuck, you want to have your mind blown, dude, on, I don't even know what the right way to describe it is, the level of humanity when it comes to mental illness, drug addiction, living on the streets, homelessness, that kind of stuff. Soft White Underbelly highlights it through interviews. Some of the most craziest things. And I've grown up around crazy people. Like, my best friend as a kid was taken away from his mother because his mom was a cocaine addict. A friend of mine, I brought this up on a past episode, a coworker, he was a crazy drug addict and was involved in gang activity. And he told me a story about in high school, how him and his friends were chasing another group of friends from another high school through like the streets in their cars, and they all had freaking like machetes and axes and chains and shit like that. And there was like this big gang fight where there was like a bunch of cars and they all got on and they just started beating the fuck out of each other. And it's like, holy fuck, man. Like, this is not the world I saw as a little kid, but it's out there, dude, man. And then I got into crazy shit at one point in my life, and I remember walking into a guy's house and seeing like over $100,000 in cash laid out on a table and being like, holy fucking hell, what did I just walk into, dude? And yeah, man, Soft White Underbelly takes what I saw so much further, dude. I've seen nothing compared to these people, and I'm just like, yeah, but this is, it's humanity, this is the world we live in, and it's real. And there's a side to it that if you don't kind of open your eyes to it and understand that that's where our world is, then you're kind of missing a lot of stuff. I don't know, I think in a weird way. And those people have, through those stories, I saw some really interesting stuff. There was one guy there that was going off on art and poetry, and he hit some notes. I really wish I could remember exactly how it went, on poetry itself and the people that need poetry in their lives, right? Like, how it meant nothing to him when things were good. But now that he's been through the lowest of lows, he knows how important poetry is to him and to the people around him, that like on the streets and stuff like that, how much influence that can have in your life. Man, do you have like a little Chinese dude hitting a gong in your shop or something?
No, the heater is heating up the steel in my shop and it's just dinging randomly. It's contracting and expanding. I have a 6 feet of a 6x4 sheet hanging on the side of my workbench, and that's just like gonging over there.
Have you cut it out, traced out for roses yet?
Not all of it. I cut 2 feet off for roses and lilies. Lilies, sorry. Lilies.
Cool. Like tiger lilies? So.
I don't know, just like the typical lily with the yellow and the white.
The calla lily.
Is that what is it called?
Yeah.
Just know them as lilies.
Is it? Well, okay. So
do more research on my flowers.
There's the lily that you get the six petals coming out, like a star.
That's a single one.
And this
the calla lily is like the comb.
The comb.
Yeah.
And you're doing that out of 16 gauge. What's the blank look like? Well, you got one right there.
So that's the blank.
Oh.
That's the leaf. I still have to clean up the plasma cutter.
Yeah.
I did the paper template. The first one I did was too small for my liking, so then I increased the size.
You've done calla lilies, hey, Lisa?
I have not. No, that's on my... That's on my goal list.
So I've I've forged calla lilies before from straight stock. I've never done it the style that you're going for, Matt. And to do it out of like square bar, it's essentially the exact same process you would do to do a leaf, but instead of the small little triangle that you want to go for, the small diamond off the end of the bar, you just want to go for a really big one.
Mm-hmm.
And then yeah, you flatten it out. I I'm not mistaken, like for a normal leaf you want to start with like 3/8 bar stock essentially, probably, for a decent sized leaf, right? I think for a calla lily you want to start off with something more like 5/8 bar stock in order to get enough mass in there to actually flatten it out into a nice big leaf, unless you upset the end of the bar a bunch. If you upset the end of the bar a bunch, then you can get enough mass in there to flatten out. That makes sense?
Yeah, it totally does. I'll probably end up making a couple like that just for fun. But I wanted to, I got the big sheet of steel that I got to use up because it's taking up half my shop, so.
Well, and there's another aspect. There's another aspect that to that too. So on one hand, the forged calla lily, like from straight bar stock, has an aspect of it to it that a lot of people like me and you will pick up. We can look, the three of us, we could look at a forged calla lily and be like, that was a forged calla lily from one piece of material. Most people can't see that. Most people will pick up the one you're making with sheet metal that's been welded together and the one that's been forged out. They'll look at the two and they'll be like, they're equally as good. And this is that whole like it handmade thing, you know, like at what point do you step back and say, I can't use this process? It's a lot of personal, you know, what you want in your product. Do you want to be able to look at it and be like, yes, this was forged and I don't care if the other person doesn't know that it's what I want? Or are you okay with making it not a fully forged project because product and that's what the customer wants? I provide and they're happy, I'm happy, right?
Yeah, so my plan is to forge the pieces on. I want to forge the stem and the middle part of the lily, and I want to weld the leaves on and blend the welds into the steel. I don't want it to look like it's welded. I want to blend it in, which is something I haven't done yet on welds. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to play around with that. but that's my goal with these, to kind of play around with that.
Is that something you've done, Lisa? Have you done welding to a product and then used forging afterwards to try to push the welding work into looking more like it was forged?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. All the time. When I was in school, I did forged welding, but for the work that I do, and as a ticketed welder, I grab my welder and weld my stuff together. A lot easier.
I think that's why I have there's like some adhesion from me towards your work comes from that, because we have that same background of welding, right? Like I started as a welder, you started as a welder, and then we got into blacksmithing, and we see how much blacksmithing can add to what we do as a welder, whereas a lot of blacksmiths go like, well, welding can help me blacksmith. Which side are you coming from? And there can be an obvious sign of that in your work. Were you originally a blacksmith that picked up welding, or were you originally a welder that picked up blacksmithing? I've noticed that in people's works where it's obvious this person studied blacksmithing and then learned how to weld versus this person studied welding and learned how to blacksmith.
That's a cool way to look at it. Yeah.
What kind of aspects are you taking on for learning welding, Larroquez? Did you just learn that from YouTube, or is that something that you had to like get taught by somebody, or did you just self-teach yourself?
Well, I've been selling welding supplies for about 12 years, so I've talked to a lot of welders over the counter.
Right.
at my job. And so I always ask them questions about welding just here and there, right? Because they're telling you about the project they're working on. So they seem interested and pick up some tips. Not knowing that one day I'm actually going to apply them, because this is before I was blacksmithing and had a shop. So I got the opportunity to go take a 3-day Lincoln course at Lincoln Electric.
No way. That's cool.
That was the first time I welded. So over the course of 3 days, I got to play with all their nice expensive toys and learn about welding and how to weld for 3 days. And again, didn't have a shop when that happened. So then when the shop happened, got the welder, and I've been learning on, I just use a MIG. I don't do anything fancy. Just got to take two pieces of steel and put them together. So when people come to me with fab work, and I always use a disclaimer, I'm not a welder, but I can get two pieces of stick together, and that's usually what I tell them, and they're usually happy with that. But yeah, I've learned more about welding now that I'm doing it, because I'm practicing it. Down the road, I do want to upgrade my welding setup to something a little bit better. So right now I'm using the Master Crap. But it works.
So. Yeah. It pushes wire hot.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So one of the things that I have noticed with forging over top of welds, MIG welds, is that you do have to be careful, because the MIG weld will be prone to breaking from forging it. So you have to be careful how much you put into it, because I don't know if it's the different material from being mild to what's in the MIG wire that causes that to happen, but or the stress of the weld or what it is, but it does tend to want to break if you do too much forging on it after MIG welding. Lisa, is that something, am I talking BS here? Have you ever experienced something like that?
Not that I remember.
Okay. Well, maybe it's just me and my shitty MIG welding.
No, I think maybe it depends on like how much it's going to be beat down afterwards, right? Like,
yeah.
Like if I'm doing something, I have already kind of made my two pieces, and then I'll taper it down and put the weld in and then heat it back up and just kind of like finish it off. I'm not like after that, I'm not like forging it way out thin or anything like that. Like it's usually just like at the tail end of the process.
That's where you're a lot safer with it. I think the example that I'm really thinking of when it comes to that is that if you were to weld, like MIG weld a rod onto the end of a piece that you don't want to be handling with tongs or something like that, so you want to have like a rod for a handle.
Oh, yeah.
That MIG weld tends to fail after a little while, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think maybe that's what I'm thinking of mostly. And I've also ran into situations before where it's like, you're forging out the taper on a leaf stem, and lo and behold, the fucking leaf breaks off right at the freaking right where it tape starts to taper off into a stem. Right, I'm sure anybody listening, if you're new into blacksmithing at any sort of point and you've been making leaves, you've probably ran into that's a weak point on the leaf. And it's like, well, I just put it on this. I was almost done. I put all that work into it. Screw it. Grab the MIG welder, weld it back on. Well, now it's been welded on, and you can see it's been welded on. I want to hide that weld. You go to start forging it. Oh, what the fuck? It's starting to crack on me again. Now, that could be the inherent stress that was already in the parent material coming out at that point. Could be the stress added from the weld. I don't know, but it's something that I've seen.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so I'm not talking.
My thought is if I can weld it enough to get it to hold, I'm going to try bringing it to forge welding temperatures.
Oh.
So I have like a...
Interesting. Yeah, right.
Like a half an inch, 3/8 of an inch. Sorry, 5/8 of an inch of material that I'm going to try to weld to the stem through forge welding. I just want it to hold there, forge weld it, and then after that, I'll, if there's any weld left, then I'll work that into the piece.
Interesting. That's not something I've that's not something I've done. I haven't tried to do that. Do you? You were saying you don't really do forge welding all that much, though, Lisa, right?
No, not. Like I said, I did it in school, and then I did it a little bit afterwards, like for a few years when I was running coal, but no, I don't typically do it anymore.
Yeah. Yes, cool if we, like, we're almost at our 2-hour mark, which we usually go for. I don't know how far you guys want to go into this, how much you got going on tonight, but... I'm really interested to kind of dive a little bit into some of the projects that you've worked on and get an idea of how you did some of the work that you've done.
Okay.
One of the ones that I'm really looking at is the piece that that's going to Sioux Falls. And the thing that really stands out to me a lot on that is, I want to call it the moon portion of that, and how you've got the different divots on it that go in two different directions.
That was fun.
Yeah. How much did that sheet of metal want to try to warp on you through that work?
That wasn't too bad. So that was last year's sculpture for Sioux Falls. And I did those divots on my wedge walk. So I heated up like the areas that I wanted, like to put the craters in. I heated that up with the torch, and then took it to the wedge walk and put it in there. Yeah, it was.
By hand.
Pardon?
By hand.
Yep.
Or under the power hammer. Or...
No, just by hand. Yeah.
Did you, what did you use for a hammer? Was there a top tool involved?
No, I used the round end of a ball peen hammer.
Yeah. Eh?
Yep.
Let me get in real close on that. Did you? Yeah, you can see some of the bumps from the ball peen still. Hey.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. And
now these sculptures are outside, right?
They are, yeah.
Oh, good.
What do you do for finish on them?
Ah, my man.
So it doesn't.
So that one, well, actually, all of mine I've used products from Sculpt Nouveau.
Is it that good?
So my ladybug one, I have to bring it back to the shop this spring, and. clean it up, because the product that I used from them didn't hold up that great. But the one that I used on the feather sculpture and the bee is working out really, really well. It's from them. I look in my fridge. That's where I keep all my patinas and stuff. I could get the name of it, because that product.
The fridge.
I have like this. Oops, sorry, my earbuds fell.
Why do you have the fridge?
It's just my cabinet. It's like an old school 1950s fridge that was on my parents' property when they bought this property out in Edgewood. And I was like, hey, I'll take that. It's just a cabinet.
So it's not keeping them cold then?
No.
Oh, yeah. I was like, what the fuck? I thought you're not supposed to let them get cold.
Sculpt Nouveau.
Yeah, they've got some really good products. One of the things that I found out the hard way is there's actually a Canadian supplier that you can order from versus the American side. If you order from Sculpt Nouveau directly from the United States, you will get dinged hard. I mean, hard on duty, dude.
Yeah.
Duty almost doubled the cost of my order, man. It was brutal. And, I'm not impressed, to say the least, because you have no idea that charge is going to hit you until it hits you, right? So
yeah, when they show up at the door, I tried then, to my husband, like, he drives to Trail to go to work, so I ordered Salty Bowl and got it delivered to the American side, and I asked him to pick it up after work one day. And he's like, sure, I'll pop over the border and grab it. And so he did, and I was like, sweet, I don't have to pay duty. And then the guard was like, he's like, what's this for? And Clay's like, oh, it's for my wife. And he, and the guard's like, well, is it for a business? And Clay's like, yeah. He's like, ha, gotcha. So then I had to pay anyways. So now I order from Sculpture Supply Canada.
Yeah. What was the clear coat that you used? What's it called? Go to your fridge. Go do it. I used this stuff called Penetrol, because who was it that the guy that did the big dragon, Kevin Stone.
So
yeah, he recommended the Penetrol, so I've tried that, and so far okay, but I don't know, man. This Sculpt Nouveau is, I saw that they had the clear coat there, and I was like, I kind of wondered if I should have tried it out.
Okay. It's the Hydro Clear, and it comes in a two can, part A and part B.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the one that I used last year, and it works really well. I'm pretty impressed with it. There's some people here that are using, actually, I heard on one of your podcasts with Kevin Stone, yeah. He uses that, starts with an R.
Penetrol. We just, when you walked away, we were talking about it.
Oh, okay. So yeah, there's some people here for the Sculpture Walk that have been using Penetrol, and it seems to hold up pretty good too. It's funny because I just went down and checked out like my sculpture last week, and then some of the other ones that I knew that used Penetrol, because I was like, oh, well, maybe this year I'll switch to Penetrol. But after having a peek, I'm going to stick with the HydroClear.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Interesting. And how long has it been that the Ladybug's been out for?
This was its second winter. Yeah, second winter. Yeah.
And they're right beside the road too, so they get a bit of salt spray from the roads, I'm sure.
They do. And then there is a pulp mill in Castlegar, like on the outskirts there.
Oh,
and apparently
yeah.
It's like pretty acidic.
Acidic rain, yep.
So our stuff, like my truck, deteriorate pretty quick.
Right, yep. Yeah. Interesting. All right. Okay, back to the sculpture there. When you were doing those divots and you had to go from one side to the other, I'm going to guess based off of the spacing of where they are, you had to play with that because of the way your swage block. Okay, this is another question. Is it swage block or is it swedge block?
Swage. It's definitely swage.
I say swedge, but... Whatever. I know what you're saying.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. No, so, because this is something that I've ran into before as well, is that when you want to do a divot like that, if you wanted to place another one, like, right beside it, you can't, because now you're hitting the flat spot of your swage or whatever, or the edge of your swage block or something like that, right? Because you have to distance out from where the last divot was placed or whatever, otherwise you'll start dimpling in the last divot because it's hitting the flat part, right? Mm-hmm. So again, that's, did I bring this up before? The swage blocks that I'm making, right, that are individual pockets, gives you
would be good. So you put those in the hardy hole, right?
I'm making different options. I'm making it so that I can have a hardy shank on the block itself. If that's what you want, that's what you get. Or I did this for a local gent. He had a swage block almost exactly like the ones I'm making, but he had his from somewhere else. And it's actually really cool because his has, it's a bit thicker than the material I'm using. So he's got a ball swage on one side, and then the other side, it had lengths of round bar swage, different sizes. So he could do like half rounds. You know what I'm saying? Like yes. 6 inches long, half round. So he could do, you know, round out bars on it, and there was different sizes. So you could flip the swage block from one side to the other and get those different effects. But I made a hardy hole holder, essentially. So it was like a tray with a hardy hole on the bottom of it, or a hardy shank on the bottom of the tray. And you put your hardy block inside that tray, and then there's a lock nut that you, or a threaded bolt on the side of it. You can tighten up against a swage block. It locks a swage block into that tray, and now you have a holder for your swage block, so it's not going to move around on your anvil, right? It's essentially like putting a hardy shank on your swage block without having to put a hardy shank on your swage block. And the other side to this is, if you were to purchase multiple swage blocks based off of the same dimensions, but each one has, you know, different swages to them, well, now this holder gives you the option to not have to worry about putting swages or hardies on your swages. And for me, that's a big bonus, because I like to be able to use my swages on my press as well. And if I put a hardy shank on it, now I can't, right? Unless I make a bolster block that has a hardy hole on it, that not, but then I'm losing like 2 inches of space on my press, because the bolster block takes up like 2 inches for the hardy shank, right? So yeah. Those are options that I'm throwing out there when it comes to the hardy block. Is like, hey, you could get the hardy shank put on it if you want to. Stay solid on your anvil. Each block can have its own hardy shank. It can go, you know, you can put it away where you put all your hardy tools that way, because you probably have some sort of rack that holds hardy tools by the 1-inch shank or whatever shank your anvil takes. Like, I've got my bigger anvil takes an 1.5-inch shank on it, I think, or whatever, whereas the smaller normal size is inch, right? So yeah. Whatever your shank is, whatever size of shank you got. I mean, I know I like a bigger shank. I know LaRocaz enjoys a big shank. I don't know about, you know, everybody else.
I got 1.8 inches.
Speaking about big deals, I don't know. We haven't brought this up yet until this point. And I regret that I haven't said it, because we're almost done here. But Abana's having their 50th anniversary coming up, June 6th and 9th, Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Huge event, you guys. Huge. Can I say, did I say that right? I don't know how.
Huge.
We're talking huge. And there is going to be some awesome demonstrations going down there, like wicked, wicked event. This forging team event that they've got going on, like, how freaking cool is that, man? Like, that is freaking awesome. You want to head on down to this, head over to their website, abana.org. You can sign up, register for this. Dude, on Sunday they're going to be opening the doors for Center for Metal Arts. Pat Quinn's going to be doing a demo tour of the facility. You don't want to miss this event out. Go check it out, abana.org. You can thank me later. Outside of that,
how far away is that for you guys?
It's too far away for me. By too far, it's like a 36-hour drive, I think, for me. Yeah, I mean, I could fly and be there in a few hours if I flew, right? But
right.
Yeah, I dealing unfortunate. So my wife just turned 40.
Right.
Obviously knew she was going to be turning 40 for a while now, right? Actually, she just turned 29 again for the 11th time. but as any husband does, he wants to do something special for his wife's 40th birthday. And all along, we've been talking about going on another trip. We went to Costa Rica for our honeymoon, and it was amazing. We've told our daughter about it so many times and how amazing it was. And it was like, we are going on another tropical trip for your 40th birthday. Like, we've got to do this. Right now, we are sitting on a possibly very large expense. We don't know for sure. Top it off. I wrote my truck off at the end of November, and that kind of was a big hit for us. I'm in a position where I can't really afford to be buying a new vehicle right now. I mean, I could, but that changes things a lot for us to be buying a new vehicle right now, or for me to be buying a new vehicle right now. So it's just like, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't do that trip we wanted to do, and if we're not going to be doing that trip we wanted to do, there's no way I'm going on any trips anywhere on my own, because that would be terrible. So all money is aside right now until we know for sure the fate of our future, and we'll see where it goes. But yeah, I've got some places I'd like to go tropical that are more on my priority list right now, unfortunately, than going to blacksmithing event. As much I love blacksmithing events, man, I've come to a realization that, you know, timelines in life and stuff like that, that I've got to soak up what I can soak up with my kid right now. That's the most important. And if I'm taking my personal time to be taken off for a weekend to go to a blacksmithing event, I know my kid's not going to enjoy it, so I can't drag her along to it. My wife's not going to enjoy it. I'm not going to drag the two of them along to it. It's a selfish thing for me to say I'm going to take off for an entire weekend without you two to go to a blacksmithing event, when the time right now is most important to be spending with my child and doing something like going on a trip with the family instead. That money and that time that I'm putting towards myself should be spent with the families. That's what I'm telling myself. I think it's the right decision.
I agree with you.
I think it is too.
Well, thanks, guys.
Making me feel they grow up quick, and you know, once the time's gone, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I tell myself the same thing. There's pretty much an event that's not happening every weekend somewhere, right? You can't go to all of them.
Yeah, that's another point.
Well, for you, maybe. I'm in Manitoba, dude. Nothing happens here. well, anyways.
Are you, Matt? In Ontario? Is that what you said?
Yeah, he's by
I'm in Ontario.
Oh, yeah.
I'm 2.5 hours from Toronto. Most Amarin's demonstrations with the Ontario Artisan Blacksmith Association happens in the Toronto area.
Cool.
There's a few that come out my way. I try to make it to the ones that are near me, because most of them happen on the other side of Toronto, so it's about 3.5 hour drive.
Oh, yeah.
But we only have one vehicle, so if I take off for the weekend, my wife and kid don't have a car. They're bound to the home.
Right.
Which is not fair to them. So I have one event that I'll take off to a year. I started doing it last year, which is Rust Fest. It's a woodworkers event. Oh, yeah. But it's at Nick's shop there.
Yeah, buddy.
Cool.
And that's the big one I want to do every year, just because last year I had a blast doing that, and then the odd hammer in like Delta or in the region.
Who goes and calls a woodworking event Rust Revival? Like, I never understood that one.
So it's Jack Forsberg that runs that, and he revives old Watkins and woodworking tools. Yeah, for better than factory.
He's an antique.
I think that's where he gets it from.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an awesome dude for sure.
He is, yeah.
One other thing that we should bring up, I don't know, Lisa, if you're a fan of using linseed oil, and if you've been listening to the podcast, I know you've heard of them, but good old the Twiller, our boys from Saskatchewan, hit them up, thetwillerlindsay.com. Use the code ForgeChat10 at checkout. You'll save yourself 10% on orders, $50 or more. Can't go wrong with food grade linseed oil. They're side products mixed with beeswax. The other one added with a little bit of carnauba. Absolutely love this stuff. I just saw Justin Lamoureux was polishing up a knife handle, adding on some of that beautiful flax wax on there, getting it nice and shiny.
Cool.
Recommend this stuff. Go check them out if you're not using it. What are you doing if you're not using it? What else are you using? Are you using that store-bought crap from the box stores? Like, what the fuck? Get over to the Twiller. Make your life happy. Make these two brothers' lives happy. These are guys working hard, putting seed in ground, crushing seed, making use of good oil at thetwillerlinseed.com. Use that code ForgeChat10. You can thank me later. Outside of that, I'm going to add in the Maritime Reed at the very beginning of this episode. And as a thank you to Lawrence, because he's been extra special to me in the last little bit. So this episode was sponsored by Maritime Knife Supply. You will hear that at the beginning of the show, but you'll hear it again now. Head over to maritimeknifesupply.com. Use the code FSCKILN at checkout to save yourself $100 on even heat or paragon kilns. And I'm interested to know what you have been listening to in the shop. LaRoquez, your friend Patrick, I know you guys are buddies, started a playlist for us on Spotify, which is freaking awesome, because we've been bringing this up for the last few episodes here for about a year now, I think, almost. All these different songs we listen to, that playlist is looking pretty eccentric. What are you going to add to that playlist, brother?
So I've been listening to a band that I kind of forgot about for a while, and I've fallen back in love with them, and I absolutely love their work, and they have a song called Hammered. And the band name is Tyr, T-Y-R.
Oh, yeah.
And at the beginning of the song, there's an anvil ringing.
Cool.
I absolutely love that song. So that's been my go-to lately.
You just made Nick very happy by adding that to the playlist, I think, man. He will have admiration for you for adding a song that has anvil sounds in it.
Or yeah.
Lisa, what have you been listening to, bud?
I usually just listen to the local radio here.
What? Take off.
I told you I'm old school. I do like country music.
We're done. Yeah. See you. Goodbye.
Speaking of bands that have kind of been coming up for me again is Offspring. That's one that whenever it's on the radio, I'm happy to hear.
That's awesome. I love Offspring, man. I went through a hate phase with them, but I, as much as I hated them, I always actually deeply inside loved them.
I agree with that.
Give me a song.
Jenny's Road.
Jenny's Road?
Not what it is?
Trying to remember which one that is. I love Offspring. What song was that? I don't know what song that is.
Yeah, it's fun how Beastie Boys is coming back. My kids watch that new Mario movie, and there's Beastie Boys in there. That's fun, too.
Good old Beastie Boys. Yeah, I don't know. A friend of mine showed me an album that they released a few years ago, and I was just like, no, sorry, it doesn't do it for me. It's not, I don't know. They had their time, and I don't know.
Yeah,
the Intergalactic album was kind of cool. Enjoyed that. I'll throw a wild card in there that's different from most of my stuff. Band I recently got introduced to through, I'm doubling down here. Shout out and a new band I'm going to add. My shout out goes to Getty Ruxpin. I think I've shared his account to you. Hey, both of you guys, I think I shared it to you guys. The trippy AI art.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Okay, I found that Jeremy from JM Forge, he sent me that. I think it was either Saturday morning. No, it would have been Sunday morning, because Saturday morning I have to get up and get going quick because my kid's got jiu-jitsu in the morning and I take her to that. Sunday morning I have time to like lie in bed and browse through shit. So I was lying in bed Sunday morning, probably for an hour, browsing this guy's videos, just like tripping out in bed, like holy fucking, it felt like I was on drugs watching his guy's videos, dude. But not every video, but almost every video had a song where I was like, this is an awesome song, I need to write this down and go download this band, this is awesome. And one of the bands was called Being Dead. It's a brother and a sister that do some really interesting music that I find. I don't know if you've ever heard of the band Fiddler before. They're kind of a well-known band, but Fiddler does, it's alternative music. Is that right? It's not punk. It's kind of punky, alternative. But this Being Dead band sounds a lot like Fiddler with a female vocalist. And it's just brother and sister, and they jam so well together. And the song that I recommend checking out, it's called Wild Man, and there's the live version from KUTX radio show. They've got a live recording on YouTube. It's just got this wicked energy to it that if you close your eyes and listen to the song, you kind of want to scream along with them in a weird way and bang on the drums with them at the same time. It sucks me in. It might do the same to you, so I highly recommend going and checking them out. Yeah, that was a long-winded explanation on the music I'm listening to. Sorry.
What was your shout out?
Getty Ruxpin.
Getty Ruxpin.
Yeah, you got a shout out? But that's not something that we've been doing lately. Who do you recommend somebody for me to go and see, dude? Doesn't have to be a blacksmith; it could be anybody.
Me?
So mine would be K-Town Custom Cutlery.
Cool.
And that's my buddy Mark. He got into knife making not too long ago, less than a year ago. And when he showed me the first knife he made, which was a while ago, I didn't believe he'd never made one before. Because the fit and finish on it was just perfect.
It's crazy. When
And he's doing some pretty awesome work. He's getting into the stabilizing his own handles and cooling up, and he's doing some awesome work. So we'll give him some love.
And that's a guy that's near you?
Yeah, he's in Kingston.
Oh, nice.
Ontario.
Holy shit, I'm 3 followers away from 7,000 followers. Cool.
Wow.
That's growing quick, man.
Yeah,
I was just at 6,000 like a month ago.
Lisa, you have a shout out?
Well, I mentioned Jeffrey Funk before at the New Agrarian School. He's a shout out for me. And then, I like looking at his page for inspiration. And like I said, to Mark at Mr. Forge, he's awesome.
I like both of those. I have a lot of love for Mark. I made him episode 100 because I believe that, yeah, I honestly believe that he is, he's kind of like one of those, when you think of blacksmithing in Canada, he's at the top of the list. Like there's a few guys like Sean Cunningham, Ethan Hardy, Timothy Dick, Who else would hit the top of the list for you? Oh, holy fuck, I can't believe I forgot this. These guys is Nancy and what's the husband's name? Nancy Holy shit. I've had them on the podcast twice now. They were episode 24 and 48.
Oh, the ones on the Maritime Island there.
Yeah. Dude, John and Nancy. They are like, they have been like the glue to Canarn back in the day. They are, yes, high up there. Highly recommend them in the blacksmithing world of Canada. Those are those, some of those names that really stick out. Cool. Anyways, are we ready to throw the sheepskin on it? Boys and girls, call us quits.
I believe we are.
Okay. Well, on that note, coo-coo-coo-coo-coo-coo. Good day.
Good day.
Good day.
I can hear Nick. Where is he? Ba 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 ba. There he is. All right. See you, folks.